Blog Talk Radio.
This is Tommy Lasorda, and all of you sports fans who listen to PJ, he is outstanding. What a beautiful interviewer he is. So listen in. PJ will bring a lot of exciting and wonderful things to all of your fans and wherever you are, PJ.
Welcome back to PJ Sports Talk, the place to be every Sunday at 3. I'm your host, PJ, and this is a very special show for you today. We're going to be talking about what Trout's about, baseball star Mike Trout, and what makes him good, as well as we will be talking about the All-Star game and the baseball lineup today, and I will also be talking about the smallest but biggest impact players in the NFL. And so here we go. Let's kick it right off. I'm going to get started with a few NFL news, and then we're going to get right into small size, big impact, players in the league. So first off, Brett Favre had his Hall of Fame, but coming back to Green Bay, Favre week, as they call it. They said, he was inducted into the Packer Hall of Fame, and his number 4 was retired, and he was humbled by all the fans. They all cheered him on, a very warm welcome to the one of the greatest players that Green Bay ever had, and more than 67,000 fans packed into Lambeau Field to watch Favre's induction. And he was a little hesitant. Of course, he after he left in the summer of 2008, he was traded to the New York Jets, and then he only played 2 more seasons for the rival Minnesota Vikings, and that's what really made his Green Bay fans a little upset, is the fact that he didn't retire, in Green Bay. That's what we wanted. And I can understand that there is some, Favre and Mike McCarthy didn't exactly have a very good relationship, but you just kind of have to deal with it. But that's very cool. His number is going to get retired to next to Reggie White and all those people up on the side there. So of the stadium, so very cool. Anyway, that's the news for Brett Favre, and there's a lot of good vibes coming from all of the NFL for Brett Favre. So let's get right into this small size, big impact. I'm doing this in the spirit of Ant-Man. And for those of you that haven't seen the movie, a little bit of a spoiler alert. Basically, the guy can, punch the same as a regular human, yet he's in this tiny little bullet size. So, he's basically putting all this force behind this one little fist. So, that's what this is in spirit of. So let's get right into this. First, number 1, we have Jacquizz Rodgers, running back for the Falcons. He's 5'7", and he had a stellar 3 seasons at Oregon State University, and was drafted in the 5th round by the Atlanta Falcons in the 2011 NFL Draft. He's currently going into his 5th season, and Rodgers has a balance of strength, and it makes him a promising change of the pace type of back. Despite getting limited touches as a backup running back, the Texas native has made the most of his opportunities, recording at least 1 rushing touchdown and 1 receiving touchdown each season. Moving on, we have Mark McMillan at number 2. 5'7" cornerback, which is very, you know, unlikely. And, you know, if you're a cornerback or wide receiver, if you're out on the ends, you want to be tall. So 5'7" cornerback, even for a defensive back, McMillan was one of the smallest players in NFL history at just 154 pounds. The 8-year NFL veteran finished his career with an impressive 23 interceptions and 404 interception return yards in 1997. Moving on, we have Trindon Holliday, kick returner and punt returner for the Oakland Raiders, 5'5", the shortest player in the NFL today. And Holliday is known primarily for his speed. A top-ranked sprinter at LSU, Holliday gained recognition as the primary kick and punt returner for the Denver Broncos in 2012. And that season, Holliday returned one kickoff and punt for a touchdown and led the league with 481 total punt return yards. And moving on, we have Bob Sanders, 5'8", strong safety. What he lacked in vertical security, Sanders more than made up in his strength, dubbed the Hitman by his teammates for his tackling power at the safety position. Sanders was one of the league's best defensive backs. When healthy, the Indianapolis Colts safety was a Pro Bowler in 2005 and 2007 and won a Super Bowl ring with the team in 2006. Moving on, we have Antoine Winfield, 5'9", cornerback, drafted by the Buffalo Bills in 1999. Winfield played most of his career for the Minnesota Vikings, although he often covered receivers for taller than them, that were far taller than him. The Ohio State's product was one of the best cornerbacks of his decade, a Pro Bowler in 2008 and 2009 and 2010. Winfield was consistently among the league's leading tacklers at the cornerback position. He finished his career with 27 interceptions and 5 defensive touchdowns. Moving on, we have Maurice Jones-Drew, 5'8", running back, now running for the Oakland Raiders and had previous career with the Jacksonville Jaguars. He was a workhorse and a successful one at that. The former UCLA star, appeared in 3 consecutive Pro Bowls from 2009 to 2011 and led the league in rushing during the 2011 season. Moving on, we have Steve Smith, wide receiver, 5'9". What a small height for such a great wide receiver, and has made him one of the best receivers of the millennium. Smith has torn up defenses as he's well over, he's torn up defenses of opposing defenses that were well over 6 feet tall, ranking up at least 1,000 yards, receiving yards in the season, 8 times in his career. Only 2 other players have complied more yards than Smith since he entered the league in 2001. So that's pretty interesting stat there. We also have Wes Welker, another receiver at 5'9". Since 2007, no player in the NFL has caught more passes than Wes Welker. This is quite the achievement for one of the smallest wide receivers in the league. Welker had posted 5 seasons with 100 catches or more and has become the synonymous with the term possession receiver. He has led the league in receptions 3 times and holds 2 of the 5 highest reception marks for a single season in league history. What a great pair with Tom Brady. Down to number 7, we have Darren Sproles, 5'6". He's a running back as well as a punt returner. Sproles has made a name for himself as a shifting utility back and remained one of the league's most impactful players despite his slight stature. With successful stints in San Diego and New Orleans, the 5'6 Sproles remains a deadly offensive weapon in Philadelphia. Jack Soapy Shapiro, we're going back to the Mesozoic era, not really. We know that the dinosaurs can't play sports, but the 5-1 Shapiro will forever live in football lore as the shortest player in history as he looks up to his fellow teammates in the black and white pictures. Yes, he only played one game, and yes, that game was played 86 years ago, but the fact remains, anybody that short who played in the NFL deserves to be recognized. And then, last but not least, we have Barry Sanders, 5'8 running back. Considered one of the most elusive backs in NFL history, Barry Sanders dominated the league for the entirety of his 10-year career. Despite his small size, Sanders never failed to rush under 1,000 yards and missed 7 total games in his 10-year career. A testament to his skill and durability, despite not making the Super Bowl, the undersized superstar remains a household name in football lore. And that is my top 10 NFL players with small size but big impact. Stay right here on PJ Sports Talk, the place to be every Sunday at 3. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Did you hear the news? There's a new theme park in Central Florida.
All the kids are talking about it because it's totally built for us.
It's Legoland Florida, and it's the coolest place ever.
It's where we can play our part and be almost anything.
Be a knight and slay dragons.
Be a firefighter and save the day.
Get my driver's license and drive all over Lego City.
Captain my own boat like I'm on the high seas.
It's like my favorite toy came to life.
I can travel all over the country.
New York City, Washington, D.C., San Francisco.
Cities filled with over 30 million Lego bricks.
There's even a pirate water ski stunt show. Arr, matey.
I wish I lived at Legoland.
It's the ultimate land of Lego bricks.
And the best part is, it's right in our backyard.
Play your part at Legoland Florida. We are now open with more than 50 rides, shows, and attractions, like the Dragon Coaster, Driving School, and the incredible Miniland USA. We're located just 45 minutes from Orlando and Tampa. Find us on Facebook or visit Legoland.com.
This is Tommy Lasorda, and all of you sports fans who listen to PJ, he is outstanding. What a beautiful interviewer he is. So listen in. PJ will bring a lot of exciting and wonderful things to all of your fans and wherever you are, PJ.
Welcome back to PJ Sports Talk, the place to be every Sunday at 3. I'm your host, PJ, and welcome back. So we're going to get right into this. First off, we're going to start off with the lineup for Major League Baseball today. We have Seattle and the New York Yankees, Tampa Bay and Toronto, Baltimore and Detroit, Cleveland and Cincinnati, Los Angeles Dodgers and Washington, Miami and Philadelphia, Kansas City and the Chicago White Sox, Pittsburgh and Milwaukee, Texas and Houston, New York Mets and St. Louis, Minnesota and Oakland, Colorado and San Diego, San Francisco and Arizona, Chicago Cubs and Boston, Chicago Cubs and Atlanta, my bad, and Boston and Los Angeles Angels. Now, coming off of a great All-Star game, Mike Trout winning his second MVP in a row, he's had very, very good seasons, and we're going to talk about why that is. Actually, one more thing before we get into that. The Rays are behind 2 games to the Yankees, so, 3 games, my God. We're behind 3.5 games to the Yankees, so, we're going to have to try and get up there. Also, the wild card, we are 3 games behind that as well. So we're going to have to work to get that. We're fighting the Houston Astros over in the wild card. So that's what's going on there. So let's get right into this. Mike Trout. The problem with Mike Trout and nowadays with their statistics is that we can't compare him to, how fast he can dash to the first base or how his swing and, the fundamentals of his swing. We can't talk about how many home runs and statistics like that. or RBIs. You know, that's how it used to be in Major League Baseball. But now it's different with people like Bryce Harper. And I'm not going to even try and say his first name. I'm just going to say his last, Puig, I think is how you say it. You know, people like that, it really, you need to compare it with something else. So the sabermetric community of the Major League Baseball has come up with something, and that's called WAR. Now, you know, it's, again, it confuses lots of people. Of course, I was confused, too. We're going to explain all that, but first, we have to get some, you know, background on this. So, first, you know, you have, we're going to talk about pitchers, dominant pitchers. You have Nolan Ryan, Randy Johnson, Bobby Ginnison, all these, you know, good pitchers throughout the American pastime, you know, and really they're shaking that right now. You know, this is what they did, you know. They all threw hard, nothing new, right? They feared attitude with a dynamic glare towards the hitter before every delivery, also nothing new. But during the mid to late 1990s, with the Atlanta Braves, the TBS years, Maddox seemed to accomplish a generational change in the Major League Baseball with a two-seam fastball. With that one simple pitch thrown to perfection with amazing consistency by Maddox on both corners of the plate, umpires began to seemingly lose the idea of the strike zone. It was replaced with a Maddox strike zone. And by the pinnacle of the PED era, when hitters with performance-enhanced muscle tone were stepping into the batter's box, Maddox was getting strike calls sometimes 2, 3, even 6 inches off the plate. Maddox had changed the game. It wasn't until the mid-2000s that the umpires collectively started making an effort to keep the strike zone on the black, from the knees to the numbers. And though there were others to follow in his efforts, teammate Tom Glavine and the poor man's Greg Maddox, Rick Reed, they were the only similar to Maddox had accomplished. Not a unique case that deserves a once-in-a-generation anything. So with that understanding, we go back to the Angels' young talent and Mike Trout. Yes, his contributions, unlike any other currently in the game, comes from the very stats that we refuse to conjure up just for the sake of making roundabout arguments. Because people will argue this all day, yes and no, with these regular statistics. So we have to go to a more interesting statistic. In the 2012 August All-Star Game, Miguel Cabrera was voted over Mike Trout to win the MVP. Of course, in 2013 and this year, he was voted that he would be the MVP again, and he could go for the Triple Crown in next year's season. But the reason why Miguel Cabrera won the MVP honors is not because of the stats, because in that right, Mike Trout won that. But it was because of a stat called WAR. And what is WAR? Well, Mike Trout has a 10.7, and it was almost enough to knock off Cabrera in the 2012 season. And he could have accomplished a Triple Crown, which has not been a feat accomplished since 1967. And so, you know, what is WAR, right? So let's move into that. WAR stands for Wins Above Replacement, and it is an attempt by the sabermetric baseball community to summarize a player's total contributions to their team in one statistic. You should always use more than one metric at one time when evaluating a player, but WAR is an all-inclusive and provides a useful reference point. WAR offers an estimate to answer the question if your players got injured and their team had to replace them with a freely available minor league or a quadruple A player, expressed in a wins format. So we could say that player X is worth 6.3 wins, to their team, while player Y is only worth 3.5 wins, which means that it is highly likely that player X has been more valuable to player Y. So let's say this, right? Mike Trout, you know, he has a 13.5 wins to their team, right? Now, I don't necessarily know how to calculate this. I'm not, you know, a sabermetric kind of guy. But let's say Mike Trout has 13 wins, right? And the backup only has 3, right? So that means that Mike Trout is worth 10 wins to his team. So that's basically what this is saying. And Miguel Cabrera beat Mike Trout out in that 2012 season. And that's what makes Mike Trout so special, is that he can give so many wins to his team and, you know, not have a backup. Now, you know, he is the best player outright, you know, in the Major League Baseball as of right now. You know, with, you know, amazing home run stats and all that, but WAR is really the almighty decider. So that is what makes Mike Trout so good. It's not a swing. It's not any of that. It's the fact that he can bring wins to his team and that he knows how to get the job done. And that's basically what it is. Anyway, thank you for listening to this edition of PJ Sports Talk, the place to be every Sunday at 3. I hope you enjoyed today's show. And remember to always talk the talk and walk the walk. Have a great Sunday.